I'm Neil Fagan.
I'm Steve Ball.
And you're listening to Scribble. Welcome to the programme, Steve. First time that you've been on.
Thank you, Neil. It's a real pleasure to be here and I'm really looking forward to today.
Yeah, well, as last week Jeff said, we've got a smorgasbord of a show. Well, this week we've got a veritable feast.
Absolutely fantastic. Should be tasty.
Oh, tasty, I'll say. This is going to attack your senses, this one. So on the programme this week, what we've got is a lady by the name of Karen King, Don Wells, Ryan Woods, Joy Wilson-Parrish, Essie Yankee, Paul Griffiths, Marco Castellan, Andrew Jonathan Daniels, Deepa Chandri Ram, R.G. Kirk, Marianne Finch, R.C. De Winter, and we're playing out with Cara Johnstone. It is a packed show this week.
Is that all we've got?
That's, how are we going to pack that into an hour? But we're going to give it a go. So as we say every week, and I know you've been listening every week to it as well, Steve, kick off your shoes, sit back, grab a cup of tea, and just take it easy, because it's going to be a great programme.
Sure it is.
Yeah. Okay, here we go. Let's kick off with Devil Broke Her Wings. You're going to love this one. This is an absolute classic. So this is by a lady by the name of Essie Yankee. And what she's doing is she set up this group called Secrets and Chambers. They're writing all sorts of poetry. They're doing a special session into the future where they're going to talk about all sorts of abuse that happens in the home. And they're raising money for this to make it more high profile for everybody. And she's based down in London. So just have a listen to this, Steve. Say what you think.
Late nights, sirens wail, bright light, scary tale, baby sleep, heartbeat, fast pace, fears deep, takes hold, no control, short breath, choke hold, panic face, I'm on the edge, I can't relax, my cluttered head, pacing, cleaning, bleeding scratch, got a itchy, scaly patch, mind's a mess, I feel detached, I gotta fix it, get it back, fast track. Need to rest, exhausted by the heavy dread. Need my bed, can't sleep, insomnia, anxiety. Doctor saying PTSD, thoughts invade involuntary. What if he comes here looking for me? Double check locks, but still too scared to walk past my windows in case he is there. He's going to hurt me, he's still got that bat. Maybe he'll kill me and never look back. When I walked out the door, I thought I was free, but the impact was like a fast car to a tree and a crash that I thought of involuntary. The crash never was, but I thought it could be. Flashbacks back to him threatening me. What if those threats now came to be? Lost in a thought chain of ways he could hurt me. Cold sweats and migraines, I'm on high alert. See from night to the dawn, I'm nervous. I'm worn, I'm shaking, I'm terrified, stuck in a storm. Loved ones and friends cannot comprehend. I've left him, so surely the nightmare must end. Earthquakes create an aftershock, monsoons burst banks. Avalanches eradicate and hurricanes tear up lands. It can take years, decades, lifetimes to recover from such things. Surviving domestic violence is like a tsunami while you swim. It's an ascent against a landslide, a flight through tornado winds. So if you know a woman who is weathering such things, then you've truly met an angel. It's just the devil broke her wings. I said you've truly met an angel. It's just the devil broke her wings.
How good was that?
Wow, what a start to the programme, Neil.
How powerful was that? I mean, I chose that because I've been speaking to Essie Yankee and they're doing such a great job down in London because they really need to profile this domestic violence, so that's why they're doing it. So it's an absolute cracking piece and we'll cover more of that as we go on. But what has caused on Facebook with some of the guys who are involved in the programme is people are now writing in about bullying and talking about it and trying to get it high profile, and I think it's something great that we can put on the programme.
Absolutely, Neil, yeah. Especially if that, you know, helps them to raise some money for the charity. But I'll tell you what, listening to that one, I could just feel my heart rate going up a little bit. It reminded me of when I was a kid, going on a ghost train. You didn't quite know what was coming around the corner.
Yeah.
So, yeah, really powerful start, Neil.
Yeah, it felt like that for me as well. I must admit, it got me a little bit agitated, but it was in a good way.
Yeah.
And I think what they're doing is just so superb that we've got a profile.
Absolutely,
and we're going to make sure that it's out there.
Wherever we can, good luck to them.
Absolutely. So nice one, Essie. Great to have you on the programme. We're going to move across. So that was down in London. So Essie's based down in London. We're going to move right across the pond now to a gentleman by the name of Don Wells. And Don sends in lots of word to us, and we're covering this. Unfortunately, he can't read it because... he would rather hear somebody else read it. So what we've got, we're doing a bit of a twist. It's been written by a man, but we're going to get a lady to read it. So Louise, one of our production team, is going to read this. And I'll be interested to see what you think of this, because when I read it in a man's voice, and now I've heard it in a woman's voice, it is a little bit different.
Right.
Just have a listen.
Good.
Don Wells, Endearments. Divine is your smile and sweet is your gaze. I pray we're together for all of our days. For all of my time here on this earth, only your charms gives my life worth. All the world's rubies, emeralds and such, to me are worthless compared to your touch. Even the stars, set like diamonds above, will not endure as long as our love.
I like that. It gave it a whole different twist to me when I heard it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know Don, and no disrespect to him, but that sounded to me like it suits a lady's voice.
Yeah.
Soft, gentle, serene.
Nice and melodic. I love the way it's been put together. He's done a sterling job on that, and he's sent quite a few in, and we'll cover more of his stuff on as we go through on different shows. But I really like, the twist of having it written by a man, which showed his gentle side in the way he'd written it, but having it read by a woman, because it kind of brought it to life a little bit for me.
Yeah, and if you look at the first poem and the second poem,
worlds
apart in terms of energy and
absolutely.
And emotions that it brings out, Neil. So.
Yeah, you know, we were there at high energy with Broker Wings, The Devil Broke Her Wings, and then we brought it right down to something nice and soft, which was a really nice way of doing it, of starting the programme off. Now, last week we went to America, and we spoke to Jen Walls, and we had her on the show. She was out in St. Paul's in Minnesota. This week we're staying in the UK. So this week we've gone to a gentleman by the name of Ryan Woods, who's an author. He's a great author, by the way. He writes horror stories, had quite a few things produced. And he tends to write within that horror genre for a living. But he writes some great poetry as well. So on this Meet the Poets, where we get into the background of it, I spoke to Ryan over Skype and did a quick interview with him. And he was just cracking talking to him. And I think you'll get a good feel of what stimulates a writer to write what he's doing. Let's have a listen to it.
Ryan, thanks very much for joining me today. Tell me a little bit about your writing and your poetry. Where do you get your inspiration from?
Funny enough, a lot of people probably know that I write a lot of horror, but what people don't realise is that they seem to think that people who write horror, they're like bloodthirsty, you know, cannibalistic idiots. And that's why I always like to do the poetry as well, because it was strange story. I'll tell this little story. Funnily enough, I actually got into poetry through a horror story. I once read a book called The House That Jack Built by Graham Masterson. And there was just a little scene in the book where there was a guy in a bar and he's speaking to a woman. And he's like chatting her up and he says to her, "Do you like malarmy?" And she's obviously not as well versed with poetry as he is. And she turns to him and says, "What's malarmy, a drink?" Now, a lot of people might not know who malarmy is, but he refers to Stephane Mallarmé, the 19th century French poet.
Yeah.
And he quotes a little piece of poetry to her from that, in that story. And from that, I just thought, oh, that's interesting. I'll look up who this guy is.
Yeah.
So ultimately, Stephane Mallarmé was, and I really got hooked in his poetry. And one in particular called Herodiad. And it's a one I always go back to. I always quote to when I'm talking about Stephane Mallarmé. That's really where I get into the poetry side of things. So I kind of like always telling a little story just to show that, you know, people can like horror, but can also like poetry as well. You know, it's like I was thinking of being like an actor. You know, you should be able to play all different roles. So
yeah, sure.
You should be able to write horror, but write poetry as well. You know, we're all shouldn't get stereotyped into one kind of writing or whatever. Just like an actor doesn't want to be stereotyped into one kind of role. Yeah. But I've always been interested in horror, and even when I was a kid, I think my love of horror started off from when I was young. My parents used to every Saturday night we'd watch the old black and white double bill features with the Wolfman and Dracula.
Oh, I remember those with Boris Karloff in.
Yeah, Boris Karloff and Lon Chaney Jr.
Yeah.
And I always used to love Bela Lugosi, always used to come out of those eyes. And so that's basically where I think my love of horror started. And obviously started to really like Stephen King, like most people do. And I kind of got hooked on Dean Koontz. He wrote a character called Odd Thomas, yes, which really exploded my interest in horror. I thought, I really love that character. And I thought, yeah, I love this. I'll have a go at this myself, I think. And it started off about 15 years ago. I started writing a vampire novel, which for one reason or another, I never finished.
Yeah.
It's probably something I might go back to one day. I've always wanted to go back to it because I've always had this thing where I hate stories where they don't explain how things come about. So you get a vampire novel, but you never know how the vampires came to be.
Sure.
Or a zombie novel, and they never explain how zombies came to be. They just happened to be there. So I thought to myself, I'm going to write something and I'm going to explain it all so that people can say, all right, yeah, I understand now why there's zombies in this story. They didn't just appear from nowhere. And then I came up originally with the character's name of Paige Turner, because I like doing little plays on words. So I thought, Paige Turner, you know, people read a book, it's interesting, call it Paige Turner. So yeah, Paige Turner. But as it turned out, there was already a literary character called Paige Turner. So I thought, what can I do now? So I thought, well, I'll drop the Turner, I'll keep the page, and I'll make that the surname instead of the Christian name. And I came with Cinnamon because I like to cook, I like to bake. And we almost got our daughter Cinnamon once, so that's how Cinnamon Page actually came about.
Got it.
I
don't mean to interrupt you, but I remember that, Pete. You know when you did the reading, there was one piece in that which made me laugh, and I know it was one of these tense, because I'm a bit like you, I used to love all the old horror films, but there was a piece in it when Cinnamon Page is explaining where she is, and she says, to be or not to be, which really did make me chuckle, and when I listened to your recording of it, I could almost sense a little bit of a laugh in your voice, you know, when you did it, and I think that's what's the attraction is with it, you know, when you start reading it, if you can inject that just little bit of humour into some of these things, it's great. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you there, but...
No, if I burn. Yeah, it's always been my intention with the story. I mean, obviously, I want it to be first and foremost, I want it to be a horror story.
Yeah.
But I don't want it to be, you know, just blades and blood and guts. I want anybody to be able to read it. Somebody who's into horror, I want there to be enough horror in it for them to be happy. Mm. And somebody who just likes a good story, I want them to be able to read it. And think, yeah, that wasn't so bad. You know, it wasn't too much gore and viscera in it. I could actually read some more of these. So I'll put these little nuggets of humour in and little plays and words that I like to do. And that was what the point was with the Cinnamon Page story, just to try and create a story that everybody can enjoy, not just horror books, something for, as a bit of something for everybody. So that's, like I said, always be little nuggets of humour in there. And when you read the whole story, you'll find that's like a theme that runs through the whole novel. There's little bits of humour every once in a while just to break up the horror.
Sure. And I think that's the alluring thing about the stuff that you write, whether you're writing your horror stories or your poetry. Because when I read it, because I know what your voice sounds like, because, you know, you've read for the show before, I'm reading it, and I'm reading it in the way you speak. I know that sounds a bit weird, but that's in my head. That's the way I see it. And what I really like about it is the play on words, you know, the way you're twisting the words around and everything comes back together. And that's what is so creative about the whole process.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I enjoy it. I've always been enjoying little plays on words, like you say, in the novel and also in the poetry as well. So I've been really getting into spoken word poetry a lot lately. I keep saying Bob Williams put me onto it, the spoken poet performer, Shane Coyzan. I've watched some of his stuff, I've really got into that lately. I really enjoy that kind of stuff. So I've been in my poetry, I've been trying to do a little bit more that kind of thing. I've turned it from, you know, into a piece that you can actually imagine being on stage and performing it. I really, you know, I like that at the moment. I'm really getting into that side of things. So I'm trying to work that into my poetry a bit more later. So I'm hoping it's coming across that way. And I've had a few comments with the last one I did, and people seem to be grasping that now, but I think that's what he's trying to do. He's trying to put this forward as like it could be a performance piece, you know, spoken poetry. So, and something I really like at the moment.
And I think that was the thing, you know, you shared out the Shane Kozan video, and I was absolutely enthralled with it because I love this performance poetry bit.
Right.
He was amazing, wasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he's got lots of stuff on YouTube, and there's some other stuff. Some of it, I mean, I'm a grown man, honestly. I can only say, I don't think I've ever cried so much as a grown man since when my kids were born, because it's just so moving. Some of the stuff he does, he's just like, he does one about his grandfather called Heaven or whatever, and there's just lots of plays on words, and he does a really smart thing where he'll rhyme one line, and he'll rhyme the last word of one line with the middle word of the next line. He just does it in such a way, until you listen to it again, listen back to it, you think, yeah, I never noticed that the first time.
Yeah.
But I mean, the more you listen to it, you think, yeah, that's just pure genius. I think he really is amazing.
Yeah, and I think that's a real clever bit about what some of these people are doing out there. And I see that in the work that you're doing at the minute. You know, when I read the extracts from Cinnamon Page, and you sent me over, you know, those few pages for me to read, and I look at it, and as I'm reading it, I'm a visual person because I'm a frustrated artist at the end of the day, and everything I'm reading, well, you know, the way you've written it, I'm there, and I guess that's the sign of a good writer at the end of the day, because it's far better than TV, and it just creates these images in your mind, I've spoken to my wife on a number of occasions, and I said, I just love to be in his mind, because some of the stuff you're coming up with, I think, how did you come up with that? You know, it's just great. And I get, are you taking that inspiration from the things that you've been exposed to in the old films that both you and I used to watch years ago?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. I try and get inspiration from everything. I mean, nature, you know, I'll see something, you might be just out in the car out in town, and you see something, and maybe like a homeless person, and straight away things will start going around in my head, and I'll start thinking of things. And the frustrating thing is, all the time, great thoughts come to me in the middle of the night. I know it happens to a lot of people, and it's so frustrating. I've always been worried that I'm going to come up with a great idea.
Yeah.
I think if I don't write it down by morning, it's going to be gone, and I'm not going to be able to recall it. And I've actually told a few other people online who've had the same thing happen to them. I keep saying, well, I've got this app on my phone. It's called Evernote.
Yes.
I say, get that, because it's great, because it's like a little miniature notepad. And if I wake in the middle of the night, which I often do, 3-4 o'clock in the middle of the night, I think, oh, God, I've got to get this down. So I'll just go on my phone on Evernote, and I'll write it down. The next one, I think, oh, I'm so glad I saved that, because I couldn't remember it. But I didn't have it down. It was gone, you know. It's been a godsend, it really has.
Yeah.
But it does come at the strangest times, inspiration, really does.
Oh, it does. I mean, I'm out walking with the dog every day. You know, I'm up early in the morning, I'm out walking the fields or walking the roads, depending on what the weather's doing. And I'll be walking around, and there'll be words spinning around in my head, or visual images spinning around in my head. And by the time I get back, I've forgotten them. You know, it's just one of those things as you walk around. But you're right, inspiration strikes you at the strangest of times, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. And for me, an idea for a story, it's not always, the idea of the story doesn't always come as a story. I might come up with a character name or just one word, and it all develops from there. I love the way it works itself out. You know, like with the Cinnamon Page, I never really had it all set out in mind at first. I just came with a name. I thought, there's a dessert, I don't know if you were aware of it, but there's a dessert called Death by Chocolate. It's like a really rich chocolate cake.
Yeah, I know the one you mean, yeah.
And when I came with the character Cinnamon Page, I thought, yeah, it's going to be about zombies, because for me, zombies are probably the most iconic horror figure is at the moment. There's just something about something that wants to eat you alive that I find incredibly frightening.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one.
So I thought, how can I work this zombie story? What can I do that's going to be different to, you know, what everybody else has done? You know, everybody else has done this, you know, toxic waste or that kind of thing or whatever.
Yeah.
And I thought, what can I do that's going to be that little bit different? And I thought, this Death by Chocolate. And I thought, my daughter, if you talk to my daughter, she'll say, Dad, that's my idea. I came up with that. Because I originally had Cinnamon Page, Death by Chocolate. And my daughter says that she told me to say Undeath by Chocolate.
Right.
I thought, yeah, that's perfect. Zombies are the undead. So yeah. It made sense, Undeath by Chocolate. So that's where it came from, really.
Brilliant.
And it's obviously the link with Haiti and voodoo, and that's where it all kind of intertwines and starts to take form.
Brilliant. I'm looking forward to reading the book when it's finished. And I don't want to put you under pressure, because I have done that. My apologies for that.
No problem.
Because it does take time to finish a novel. Everybody here at the team here are all waiting to hear the next instalment of Cinnamon Page. So it's going to be great. So we're really looking forward to that, which is brilliant. So thank on you. The poetry front, are you going to get into performance poetry? Are you going to go and do a few of these gigs? Or?
I'd like to, yeah. I never really thought of doing it. And then on this week's poem I did for Poincabilly, Bob Williams, again, he mentioned it. Yeah. He could actually visualise the poem I wrote this time as being performed as a performance piece. Mm. And I'm not, I'll be honest with you, I'm not that outgoing a person. I mean, if anything, I'm a little bit introverted. So I'd probably be as nervous as hell if I did do it, if I ever went on stage and did it. Well, I would love to give it a go and just see how it felt, you know. Because sometimes you write a poem and you write it down, and you think, well, this is how I would read it. But then you put it out there, even like the poem Cabilly ones, and you think, are all the other poets going to read it the way I want them to read it and envision what I'm envisioning? And, you know, because you're writing, you think, I want it to be read a certain way for me to get the full effect of it.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I've been doing with some of the poems lately, trying to make it more of a, imagine it's a spoken word poem. So I'm breaking, like, sentences up and rhyming the last word of one line with the middle word of another one. And I'll do one long line followed by one word on the next line. I'm just trying to play around with things now, get a bit more creative. So yeah, it's something I'd love to have a go at. I know a lot of people do it. I hold my hand up to it. It must be really nerve-wracking, but it is something I'd like to have a go at, definitely.
Yeah, and the only thing I would say, it is really nerve-wracking because I've been out and done it a couple of times, and I'm quite an outgoing, bolshy type of individual in real terms. So, and I've been out there and my bottle's gone. You've stood up in front of a group of people and had to read your poem, and you're thinking, oh my God, everything just goes pear-shaped, but it's a great experience. And I think the way you're writing at the moment just lends itself so much to doing those performance pieces, because it, for me, when I'm reading them, it's just sparking off all these images in my mind. And if I was sat there listening to them, it'd be one of the, it just adds another dimension to it. So if you, because whereabouts are you based in the UK?
Lancashire, near Preston.
Yeah, so you're not far from us. So if you're ever on the circuit, and if you let me know where it is, I'm going to bail over and have a look and have a listen to what you're doing, because that'd be great. It'd be absolutely super. That'd be great. Anyway, so thanks for joining me today, Ryan. It's been an absolute pleasure, and we look forward to reading the next instalments of Cinnamon Page and the finished novel when it's done. And as usual, I enjoy reading the poetry that you produce and you're posting up on Facebook. But once again, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Neil. So like I say, look to around April. I'm hoping to... that's my benchmark now. April, my birthday.
Yeah.
It's a good thing to aim for. So you put me under pressure that time, and I'm glad you did, because I want you to kick at the backside. I'm kind of like that now. So yeah, April is where I'm aiming for. So thank you for that.
Yeah, you're welcome. You can give me a good kicking when we get off air in a minute. Thanks, Ryan.
Thank you, Neil. Thanks for having the show.
There you go. That was Ryan Woods.
You've been putting pressure on him again, Nick.
Yeah, I shouldn't have done that, but I mentioned on one of the programmes that he'd have his novel finished within a month. Maybe I didn't quite get the hang of how long it takes to do a novel, but it's a great piece of work. As he said, it's given him the impetus now to actually finish.
And sometimes, you know, we need a little bit of a push and a shove. Yeah. I only wrote my first poem because you sort of gave me a bit of encouragement. Otherwise, I wouldn't have bothered. But nice to hear that zombies are still alive in Lancashire anyway. I knew they were. I just didn't want to admit it.
Absolutely. And I love the lines of the to be or not to be in his novel. That made me chuckle, that with Mr. Mahoney. But you'll be able to read the novel shortly. We'll let everybody know where you can get it from as soon as it's out and it's been published.
Yeah. And it's nice to hear where he's going to take his poetry next. He's going to try something a little bit different. So.
It is. So thanks very much for that, Ryan. Now, we're going to move on to a lady by the name of Marianne Finch, and she's wrote this piece called Demon. Now, Marianne does lots of different poetry, and I thought we'd play this one because it's a really nice piece. I think you'll enjoy this one, Steve. Have a listen to this one.
Demon. Come to the dark side. Let me into your world. I'll show you that I'm not like other girls. Their hearts are good, whereas mine is black as coal. I'll mesmerise you till you give up your soul. I'll pleasure your body in the ways you desire, things I've learned in the burning hellfire. I know how to turn and manipulate men. My conquests will want me again and again. Just relax and lie there. Just remain static. I'll blow your mind with my body acrobatic. When I'm good and ready and our tryst is through, no mere mortal will be good enough for you. So come with me, baby. You know you are tempted. All your doubts can be preempted. Your lust and your desire are all I can see. You need to be in hellfire and damnation with me. Your soul in exchange for a debauchery-filled life. Or stay in this world. Pay your bills, get a wife. A one-time offer. So what's your decision? Make the right one or watch a demon's derision?
I really like that one. I didn't drop a soundtrack under that for a reason, because I wanted everybody to hear it in the raw as how she recorded it, because it kind of hit a bit of a note, because, you know, lots of these guys, you know, a lot of guys out there thinking the grass is greener on the other side and all the rest of it. And it was a bit of a solitary tale to say, you know what, be careful what you wish for.
Absolutely.
So I thought it was a great piece by Marianne. Now, she's sent in lots of work, and we'll be profiling Marianne again on future shows, because she covers all different genres. That was just one that particularly took my eye.
Yeah, well delivered, Neil, as well.
It was,
yeah.
Really
good pace.
You know, we cut it right down to its bare bones. There was no soundtrack under there. It was nice, it was fresh, and it was really well put together. Last week's show, we were going to cover a lady by the name of Karen King, who's wrote a piece called Broken Man. And unfortunately, we didn't have time to play it, so it's definitely in this week. We're going to play it now. It's like a short story.
Okay.
So let's have a look and have a listen to what Karen's got to say.
Hello, everyone. This is Karen from Dunstable, Bedfordshire. This prose is taken from my book called The King Collection of Prose and Poetry, Book 1. Broken Man, Part 1. Once upon a time, many years ago, there was a broken man who was shocked to find that, on visiting his wife's grave, giant, vicious-looking weeds had grown overnight and he could no longer find his loved one's resting place. He pushed his way through the weeds in dizzying circles of distress as he desperately looked for his wife's grave. The weeds had become increasingly long and unkempt, and graves could barely be seen. Nettles stung him, brambles tore at him as he desperately searched. The church gardener had recently died, and the graveyard had such a bad reputation of all things dark, prowling in the night. No one had taken his place. He had briefly wondered about the position, but he couldn't pull himself out of his misery to go to work. His life consisted of being in his house, rocking in his rocking chair furiously, as if that would bring her back, and going to the graveyard to visit her. The man was lost, and he could no longer reach great heights in his earthly existence, as he was broken like an owl with a broken wing. The broken soul continued to frantically search, stumbling and tripping over gravestones until, suddenly, he found himself propelled downwards at great speed into the greedy mouth of the earth. Rocks reached out to him as he shot towards the centre of the earth, like giant teeth having their first taste of human flesh. He was like Alice in Wonderland as he rocketed down at top speeds towards the bottom of this giant hole. Eventually, he hit the bottom of this enormous hole. He looked around, dazed, realising that he felt as tiny and vulnerable as a mouse. He also realised that falling into this hole was like a metaphor of his life. He had sunk so deeply in his life, like he had in this hole. This broken man actually felt relieved to be away from the everyday demands of life and willingly surrendered to his inevitable death as darkness enveloped him. Days went by. He ate snails, worms, beetles, slugs, and drank the rain as it cursed down his hole, as if trying to wash away his sins. At first, he had wanted to disappear altogether and enter another world, like Alice in Wonderland. Yet he had time to think. 13 years had passed since his wife's death. Surely his wife wouldn't want him to be stuck in the past, ruin his life. He thought about what he wanted from his life, what she would want from his life, and if he could try and think of some sort of life and future for himself. Every day, he saw a woman and her son walking past, chatting and taking photos. She took photos of the fungi on the graves, or sunshine shining between the headstones, or the gigantic weeds that encircled the graves in a menacing manner. He felt like he wanted a potion to make himself larger, so he could climb out of his tomb to meet these intriguing people. He had tried to call to her on occasion, but she had just looked around questioningly, thinking that she was hearing voices of the dead calling in the breeze. She did give him a glimmer of hope, for she was always there, and her heart seemed to be wandering between the light and the dark. He started to pray, something they had given up for many years, for God had never heard him. He prayed she would hear, see him, or help him. He felt he recognised her, as if he had known her from a previous lifetime. This broken man started to feel a glimmer of hope and no longer wanted to be stuck in his reverie. Once again, she passed him by and he was left alone in his hole of coming darkness. Crows formed a circle around the hole and cawed as they sat and stared at him menacingly. Their beady eyes shone, reflecting the remaining streaks of light and hope in the sky. He realised he had stayed too long in his abode of unrelenting doom as lost leaves fell down his hole as if pulled by some irresistible force wanting to bury him alive. The broken man continued to lie on the ground in his open pit. A dead moth landed by his lips and he ate it greedily, suddenly wanting to find life again. He could taste death in the darkness as the devil's hour was nearly upon them. All kinds of evil was let loose at this hour. They arose from the depths of hell and the darkness of his mind. Muddy tears of fear and sadness fell down his cheek, forming clear streams between the mud. He felt like his lungs were full of earth, weighing him down and slowly suffocating the life out of him. He could hear the darkness and chaos in his resting place. The clinking of chains and wails echoed around his hole. The forgotten man lay with his hands firmly over his ears, trying to look out his existence. The evil beast had a wonderful night of terror ahead while he waited, wondering if he would ever see the light again. The crumpled man continued to lie in his shrunken skin, resembling a specially preserved mummy. His light only glimmered lightly, like a candle soon to be extinguished. He lay on the damp earth, cold, bedraggled, desperate, and wondering if he would ever be found. He felt so lost. He no longer wanted to be defeated, a victim. He wanted to live, to be a candle burning brightly, and to be released from his self-inflicted darkness. Eventually he fell into the welcome arms of sleep, the sounds of the malevolent crow still surrounding his suffering soul. His arms and legs were cramped from his fetal position as he tried to find some comfort. The unwanted smell of the soil strongly hit his nostrils as the recluse lay rejected on the ground. He drifted off to unwanted nightmares, while the ghosts and ghouls danced on the gravestones in delight, waiting for the untimely death of this broken man. The next day, he was awakened by the sounds of laughter and wondered where it was coming from. He spotted the woman laughing with her son. She had her camera dangling around her neck, bumping triumphantly against her red robin jumper. They sauntered past his new, unwelcome home. The broken man wondered, sadly, if this was going to be his final resting place. He had little energy and was quickly becoming delirious, for he had been hidden down his hole for several days, and he had only been able to drink the droplets of water that had fallen into his mouth through his opening to the outside world. Perhaps seeing a mother and son was just wishful thinking, and he was hallucinating. The broken man knew he had little time left, so he opened his dry, cracked lips and tried to shout. All that escaped from him was a faint croaking sound, like a frog that had been recently partially squashed by a car. He tried to get up. His weak legs defied him and he dropped reluctantly to the ground, slipping and sliding like a mud wrestler. He found himself staring straight at a crow as it nodded its head in delight and cackled with laughter. He flapped his wings in joy, as if emphasising a poor soul's lack of freedom as he lay trapped and terrified in captivity. The crow was soon joined by the others, and they jumped and flapped their wings together, screeching in a threatening manner. Voices were coming closer, and he realised he could hear a young man talking. The tortured soul craned his neck and spotted the boy and his mother again. They were near his hole, and he could just about see that they seemed to be staring at something. The man made one last attempt to push himself off the ground. Dirt dragged under his nails as he slipped and skidded around. He crawled over to the side of his soon-to-be grave and levered himself up to a standing position. He staggered over to the centre of the hole and stared at the mirage. The young lad and his mother were staring at the camera. The lad was pointing at the camera in an authoritative gesture, as if he were giving her strict instructions in its use. The broken man opened his mouth to cry out again and started waving his arms around in an SOS gesture, only to be drowned out and overshadowed by the waiting crows. They cackled as if celebrating his demise, and he gave up, devastated and defeated. Suddenly, the boy looked straight at the crows and saw them surveying and surrounding a hole. He purposefully walked away from his mum towards the crows and stopped dead in his tracks, just short of the abyss. The pathetic man in the hole stared at this miracle of a boy. It felt like he was seeing things, yet he knew the boy was real, as he had been counting the days with broken sticks in a tally on the earth. This was his fourth day, and he had seen both the boy and his mother every one of those days. His second saviour appeared in the form of the boy's mother this time. She stood as if shell-shocked as she stared down at him from the edge of the abyss. He was a shadow of the man he had once been, shrunken, saddened and dishevelled. Yet as she looked at him, she could sense the strong, brave man that he once was, and she felt slightly hopeful for him. Perhaps she would be able to help to lift him out of his physical demise. With shaking hands, she took out her phone from her rucksack and called the fire brigade. She threw down a bottle of water and a snack bar for him. The crows cawed in disgust and flew away in anger. The boy was very chatty, and the man felt his heart soften as he was drawn to him. Some of the man's troubles were forgotten as he listened with great interest to the boy's stories. The sounds of sirens approached. A fire engine and an ambulance appeared in unison. The rescue operation started. The broken man started to feel uplifted and whole as he was lifted out of the hole. The experience felt surreal, and the man started to wonder if there was such a thing as God and angels after all. He gazed at his surroundings and marvelled at the gorgeous orange and pink setting sun. This new man was amazed to see that weeds no longer stood sentinel in the graveyard surrounding the graves. They were no longer there. The grass was neatly cut. Fresh flowers had been placed on the immaculate gravestones. His world had been a nightmare, but had become a dream. He wondered if his past attitude affected him. But now he felt more positive, and things seemed much better. Perhaps there was a new gardener, or maybe it was his state of mind that had affected him. Who knows? The answer, dear readers, is up to you. Thank you.
Well, there you go. That was by Karen King. And it's, I guess it's a story about having hope even when you think everything's lost.
Yeah, I think it is, Neil, because obviously it was like a roller coaster down the slippery slope, and then can you get back on the bottom of the ladder to get yourself back up the other side?
And I think we've all felt that at times. You feel like everything's pointless and there's nothing you can do, but there is. There's always light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, and there was just a little bit in the first third of it where Cameron talked about sort of, you know, wanting to stay in the hole really and not wanting to try and get out of it. And I think in your difficult times, sometimes you just want to shy away, shut the curtain, shut the door
and stay away from everybody.
Stay in everything,
So it was great. So thanks very much for that, Karen. We're now going to move on to a lady by the name of Deepa Chandran Ran, who's wrote a piece called Tomorrow's Flowers. And as we did with Don Wells, where we got Louise to read something that was written by a man, I'm going to read this piece by Deepa. And I like this. I've listened to this, Steve. See what you think.
Okay.
Deepa Chandran Ram, Tomorrow's Flowers. In the moonlight, your warm silhouette lingering down the grove. Through the mist, lucid, your open arms enticing me to an embrace. You hum a melody, a love-burdened song of treasured fragrance borrowed from flowers in bloom. The river ripples, earnest euphony of your heartbeat, the wild cherries sway blushed with sweetness rich. The cry of gaily crickets intonate your notes. Wisdom recedes beyond horizon, no past, no future, but this moment. Among silent witness, the land grow to sea, earth drenched in ambrosial sweat. Yield to our bliss, flowers of tomorrow, bloom in the wilderness.
That's quite a nice, calming poem, that, I thought.
Yeah, I'd call that an intellectual poem, Neil.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. Yeah, you've got to think about it.
You've really got to think about it, but when you get it,
yeah,
again, it's powerful.
Yeah, it's a cracking piece, and Deepa sends quite a few things through, so we'll cover some more of her stuff in the future. It'd be great if she could read them, because we always like it when the poet themselves read them. But I thought it was quite a calming piece.
Yeah, but I thought you read it well, Neil.
Yeah, it came across well. I was pleased with that one. Anyway, we're going to move on to a lady by the name of R.C. De Winter, and I keep on promising to play some of her stuff, and we never get time to do it, but we're going to get time today. This is called Leap Day. She wrote this because it was Leap Day the other day, and you've got to be careful who's going to ask you to marry you.
I stayed indoors all day, Neil.
So she wrote this piece. Have a listen to it.
It's a day for leaping, old tradition says. Right over love and into wedlock. Our turn, we women, to pursue, cajole, and beg a hand in marriage. Even were I inclined to do this thing, my circumstances in my heart conspire against me. Who could I ask? There's none in view. And if there were some worthy, I could not bend the knee. Oh, no. To be found wanting once again would sure destroy me. Alas, for opportunity blessed with the smile of approbation. Cannot be done. I'll wait until I'm older, ere I rend my heart and reach for love again.
I've been listening to her stuff on SoundCloud, and some cracking pieces on that. Really are good.
Yeah, I don't know the line in there, Neil, about if you know, I couldn't bend the knee.
Yeah.
I just wonder whether there was a bit of humour in that, or whether I misunderstood that.
Yeah. No, well, we'll see. If she gets back to us, we can clarify that. Yeah. But I just thought it was a great piece, so we play that. And we're going now to a guy called Paul Griffiths. He's the Birkenhead poet. He's been on the programme a number of times now.
Yeah.
I quite like Paul. He's a performance poet, and it always makes me laugh. But this one's quite a serious one. Have a listen to this.
Hello, everyone. Paul Griffiths here, also known on Facebook as the Birkenhead Poet. If you like my poems, please check out my page on Facebook. A big shout out to Neil and everyone at Scribble Dooner. Sound job promoting poetry in the written word. This poem's called The Ghost Who Came Back From the Dead, and I hope you like it. She got the message from Uncle Sam, small brown envelope and telegram. It said, died in action, thanked her for her lost, another victim now pays the ultimate cost. He died capturing a bridge in Vietnam. Everywhere she went, she saw the ghost of her man. When she looked in the mirror, brushing her hair in the corner of her eye, she could see him there. She would see him on the street when she visited places, then lose him again in the sea of faces. She never accepted that her lover was dead. She could feel him at night at the end of her bed. She carried love's torch for as long as she could. People told her to move on, that living in the past was no good. The passing years eased her pain. She learned to love and found her heart again. She found new love and security with a happy life and young family. Vietnam long since over, the war was lost. People said it wasn't worth the cost. But the war was behind her and she had moved on, living in the present, and the ghost was gone. Her life on track and running fine, the scars all healed with the passage of time. But the next day during breakfast, the newspaper said, forgotten soldier comes back from the dead. In the picture he looked so sick, his face so thin, but she looked in his eyes and she knew it was him. Butterflies beat so fast in her heart, would they tear her new world apart? She clutched the paper to her chest and burst into tears. It said, soldier escaped captivity after 13 years. She felt great sorrow tinged with joy, told her family about the soldier boy. Her husband understood, said it would be fine for her to see him one last time. She made contact a time, a place. When they met, they kissed in a loving embrace. They talked for hours about the missing years. Both life's journey brought the other to tears. He told her he loved her and it was never gone, but he understood that life moves on. She whispered she was sorry. He shook her head. The man you loved has been a long time dead. I'm a different man now, so release my heart. Your life has moved on and mine needs to start. She listened silently to everything he said. The ghost was here, but the love was dead. He gently kissed her and walked out the door, and she never saw the ghost of her love anymore. Thank you, everybody.
Well, that was Paul Griffiths, the ghost that came back from the dead. And the number of times that must have happened in the States and Vietnam when these guys were missing in action, presumed dead, and then eventually managed to get home. So a bit of a...
But came back as different people.
Yeah,
because
absolutely.
Of the experience, Nick.
Yeah, changed by everything that happened to them. So
and it'll be the same in more modern warfare as well.
Yeah, well, I don't think it's changed much. I mean, you know, war's war at the end of the day, and people get scarred in all different ways, don't they?
Yeah. So what I find interesting with Paul, though, I think his accent really...
It just fits it, doesn't it?
It just helps some of the stuff he's writing, I think, that adds a bit to it, doesn't it?
It does. There's that rawness in his voice, and it's very authentic.
Never lets you down.
It. No, he doesn't. He's great. Well done, Paul. Moving on to, as we said before, it's a packed show, so we're moving on to a guy by the name of R.G. Kirk, and he's recorded this called You Always Are.
And if you are walking by the wayside and you happen to fall down from despair, do not worry. You are more than that. For you are love. You are loved. You are. And if the troubles of the world should bring you down, know this life is but a play and you cannot be hurt. You are more than that. You are love, and peace is you. When dark clouds from a cracked storm, remember life itself is but a dream, and nothing can hurt you. You are peace. You are love. You always are. And always will be.
Stylized way that he delivers them, and I think that's what people like about it, is because he does everything in his own style, so it's quite unique in the way he actually pictures them.
Is that first time on the program, Neil Acton?
Yeah, first time on the program. Yeah, that we've had any of his work on. So I think it's just great the way that he does it in his own way.
Yeah,
which is super.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
poetry's an individual thing, isn't it? Then.
Yeah, I think so, and it makes a massive difference to everybody who reads it and produces poetry.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll move quickly on to a piece by Colin Cameron. And Colin's one of the old geezers that we've been covering in the past. He's done this piece, so have a quick listen to this.
He's the oldest geezer, actually.
He is the oldest geezer.
This is one called Realisation. I'm 62 years of age. I haven't come this far and been perfect in the way that I behaved. So, my poem, Realisation. Perfect in my imperfection. Imperfect in my imperfection. Life's a struggle. Uneven but equal balance. Sometimes lost but never forgotten. Forgotten at times, balance and time lost. Tempted to clearer air. Comes to mind, greener over there. Unsteady, misshaped thoughts abound. Rational, irrational, clear, unclear. Understanding challenged, knowledge fall short. Qualifications stacked, count for naught. Hand in hand, in hand, in hand, in hand. Approach that uncertain, certain future. Facts, fables, legend, tales. Assume, surmise. It's only heroes who ride off into their sunrise. Perfect in my imperfection. That imperfection confounds inspection.
Well, that was Colin Cameron, one of the old geezers. Not a bad piece, that. I think we'll give Colin a bit more airtime in the future. Let's see some of his other stuff. Now, we're getting close on the time schedules here, so we'll cover a couple of people quite quickly. So Marco Castellan wrote this piece called Word Formation. I voiced it for him because he couldn't get to the technologies to do it. See what you think of this one, okay. Steve.
Marco Castellan. Word formation. There it lay, still dry before the lick. A little cloud of air on the lip. Just before everything changed, just before everything was said. The moistening, a ratification of what will follow. A ritual before the word comes, before the arrival. If I could hold on to nothing, to the promise of the later, and float there on the tide between deaf and happy, and not having to wait, but simple be. Full grown, but not born, immersed, but not lost, would I ever scatter my questions?
Well, I really like that, and so I had to voice it because Marco couldn't, but I thought it was a great piece.
Thought-provoking, that one.
It was, and he writes in Dutch, he's had to translate it into English, so I'm pretty impressed with that, I have to say.
Yeah,
having trouble speaking English.
Good job he is doing the translating, not us.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, let's have a listen to Andy Daniels, 1,000 Voices. So the recording's not great on this, but we've dropped a timeline on it, and it's all about 1,000 Voices against war. And I think it works, so have a listen to this, see what you think.
1,000 voices, many more, speak out against terrorism and war. 1,000 voices, millions here, their inner thoughts, pure and sincere. 1,000 voices, many visions, hoping that those in power listen. 1,000 voices, speaking out, expressing their fears and doubts. 1,000 voices, many vows, peace and love we all need now. 1,000 voices, more unite, attempting to make our world right. 1,000 voices, many threats, broken promises and regrets. 1,000 voices, speaking blind, the enemy once more.
Okay, so I couldn't quite clear in the recording up on that, but because of the way it's done and what he's talking about, I felt that it worked quite well. Yeah. So that's why we included it in the show. It's a great point at the end of the day, so it was worthy of being on the
Intrigued program. By the title, where has he got that from?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I thought it was really good. Now, we've had Joy Parrish on the program before, but she wrote this piece called Uppity Women. I really like this. This is a great piece, and I think it's a fitting way before we go out of the show for you to have a listen to. So just see what you think of this, Steve.
Uppity Women. Uppity women wear their truths like Southern football moms upon chests wounded in life's battle. Petals uplifted by baubles and bits of life-saving remedies and love songs and ribbons from the hair of their daughters or sisters or mothers or wives. Uppity women stand tall in their deliverance from years of lips sewn shut and fingers clamped to anything but the knives that would carve out their rightful places in the world. Uppity women sing war songs from shimmering places deep within their aproned bosoms or unbound breasts, that tell their tales of magic and strength and wonder and success. They carry laser beams within moonbeams, and they get shit done from places of improbability while defying impossible odds. Some uppity women are quiet, walking their battlefields in barefoot, close-lipped silence while crafting poems or pots or textiles to tell their dragon stories, the ones they flew free upon, never having to slay from ego. Their eyes alone give the nod of secret solidarity to other uppity women, if you just carefully look. Some others are loud and fierce in their demands for their places, and the places of their daughters who are also learning the craft of fearless uppity women. The daughters are not the first to learn that their voices and their words make them warriors and goddesses and not victims, but are perhaps the first to fully believe it. Uppity women come in all sizes and colors and religions and castes. They are bankers and bakers and homemakers and poets. They are welders and healers all, artisans and alchemists of the highest order. All being women and all being uppity, they are the magic. And they called us uppity like it was a bad thing. I am an uppity woman, and I see from the look in your eyes and the swing of your hip and the way your fingers hold your precious life, just so, that you are an uppity woman as well, as we all are. We women who dare to dream and fight for our right to speak our truth, unfettered and on our own terms.
Well, there you go. That was by Joy Parrish. I thought it was great. Uppity women. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. So, love that.
Yeah, me too.
It was really good. Okay, so we're right at the end of the show. We're going to play out now with Journey Me Home by Kara Johnstad. Just remains for me to thank Steve for joining us on the programme today.
Thanks, Neil. I've really enjoyed it, and I hope our listeners have too.
Yeah, and you're going to be a regular co-host on the programme, so every couple of weeks, everybody's going to be treated to your dulcet tones.
Yeah, absolutely.
And as we say, yeah, looking forward to it. And as we say every week...
I hope the listening numbers go up and not down.
Yeah, let's hope so. As we say every week on the programme, may your God or your gods go with you. And we'll play out now with Journey Me Home by Kara Johnstad.
Temple, is that where you want to go? Yeah. I'd like to go to the temple and offer my offerings. I would like to do some deep chanting and panting. You see, I've seen all the hotels and motels. I spent hours in a car with a map in my hands. This vacation, I want to spend hours in bed. Train, so please let me explain. Before I pack up the bags and close down the house, at the pressures of time, I confess, I hate going through security and being gruffly frisked. I'll take the risk of no border control and lower my guard if we simply stay in the backyard. and tired of moving from town to town. This vacation, journey me home. No last minute fancy deals, no planes to go insane, no baggage on wheels, just skin on skin and